#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get a booty act. Leg down, smack on the ankle.
Next time, the right time.
You know the
it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now. This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Look, let's be honest. Sometimes on a Thursday night NFL game, we're going to get a dud, okay? We're going to get a lot of duds. This is where they put everybody. If you're the Tennessee Titans and you stink, this is where you're going to get some exposure. If you're Jacksonville and you stink, this is where you get exposure. So a lot of times we get games that aren't very good. Tonight wasn't one of them. Tonight was great. This is a playoff matchup. These are two very good teams. These are two teams that played really well. This is as enjoyable of a Thursday night as we've had in a while. Minnesota did have three turnovers in this game, but it didn't look like a three-turnover mess. They didn't look like a bad team turning the ball over and just couldn't keep up. You know, they played pretty well. This is the game you wanted to see out of Minnesota, because a lot of times the criticism of the Vikings has been this year, you know what, this is a pretty good team, but boy, when they go up against some of the better teams, they lose. They lose to the Broncos, they lose to the Packers, they lose to the Seahawks, and yeah, they lost to the Cardinals, but this is a better performance than we've seen in their other losses. They couldn't hang with Green Bay, they didn't hang at all with the Seattle Seahawks last week. This was a better performance from them. And so I liked this game. I enjoyed this game a lot. Arizona is very good. We kind of knew that. Carson Palmer played great. But this is a game that went back and forth, went down to the wire, and it was good for the NFL to have a game like this. It was fun. It was absolutely fun. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. And Teddy Bridgewater had made a couple of decisions tonight that weren't all that great, but for the most part, he throws a very good ball. You know, Dwight Freeney got a hold of him and was able to strip the ball out of his hands in the final seconds, and that's kind of what sealed the fate for Minnesota. But this wasn't a game, I think, if you're a Vikings fan, you go, oh man, same old, same old. This wasn't same old, same old. The same kind of losses that they've had this season against these better teams, this is not what we saw. This was a better team tonight. All right, we're going to continue along tonight with NFL and our viewing guide that's coming up in the next hour. We want to get to the Heisman Trophy with Chris Houston from HeismanPundit.com, or actually Heisman.com. He's going to help us break down the process and exactly what is going on Saturday in New York. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, Chris Swanson is going to join us from Trojansports.com on USC and the Sarkisian thing, which I kind of broke down earlier in this week. This is a sad, sad situation for both USC and Steve Sarkisian. Sarkisian is suing for wrongful termination, and he's suing for a lot of money, and he actually may have a very, very good case, because he was fired because he's an alcoholic, which you can't do. You can fire him if the alcohol problem leads to a breakdown of his duties. That you can do, but that's not what USC did. And I think he has a case here, but it's sad on both sides, because the wounds of Steve Sarkisian are going to get opened up. If he is indeed clean and sober, you go through these kind of ordeals, these kind of lawsuits, they're going to open up a lot of stories. If you're USC, there's going to be some other stories that are going to pop up. It probably doesn't get that far, because they'll probably settle. But this is a kind of story that's sad for both sides. But Steve Sarkisian, this is not a frivolous, I was wrongfully fired, give me a whole bunch of money, that we tend to roll our eyes with. We see the story a lot. But a lot of times we go, just trying to get some extra money. That's not what we have here in the Steve Sarkisian USC situation. So Chris Swanson is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. But coming up next, I want to get to the streaks that we've been talking about. There's three that we've been keeping an eye on, and they are moving into the weekend. Will any of these three streaks come to an end? We're talking about the Carolina Panthers, we're talking about the Golden State Warriors, and we're talking about Patrick Kane. who, by the way, extended his point streak tonight in Nashville, where I live, in a rather dubious goal in a 5-1 loss to the Predators. But nevertheless, it's a goal, and the kid has got 24 straight games with at least a point. We'll talk about those next. 800-777-2907. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. We got a full show tonight here on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Chris Swanson is going to join us from Trojansports.com. We'll talk USC football coming up at the bottom of the hour, their situation with Steve Sarkisian. All right, so your boy Patrick Kane got his 24th straight game with a point tonight in Nashville, where I live.
Yeah, and they got their ass kicked, though.
They did. But Kane's 20. Now, what is... I try to follow this, but here's my problem with following this, is that I lose track of games because I don't follow the NHL as well as I probably should. And so I go, I see it, and I go, oh my God, there were two games in which he got goals and points. So what is he pursuing? What's the overall record? I know he's got the American streak, but what's the overall record? Do you know?
I got to figure out the exact record. I know Gretzky had a 24. Gretzky and somebody else had a 24, and then there was Sundin, I think, had a 30 at some point in his career.
Wow, that's a lot. That's like almost half the season.
Yeah, so I want it. It probably is 30.
Well, tonight was one of those nights where I was kind of following the game on Twitter. And I follow the Predators, and they just kept, you know, they would put up tweets about scoring. You know, here's another goal, James Neal with another goal. And I kept going, oh, they're shutting out the Blackhawks. This might be the night Patrick Kane is shut down. They go into the third period, and he scores a goal. The only goal for the Blackhawks comes from Patrick Kane. At this point, I think the Blackhawks are like, you know what? Nobody shoot but Patrick.
Right.
Give Patrick the puck. We're down 4-0. It's the third period. Just give Patrick the puck every time. Let him score, because this is the only thing we're going to take out of this game. If this streak is coming to an end, it is not coming to an end on a 5-0 loss to the Nashville Predators. So the Carolina Panthers are also on a streak. We were talking about them at 12-0. They're going to face the Atlanta Falcons, who have just been an absolute dismal mess since they went on a 5-game win streak. They are 6-6. They have lost 5 in a row, and it's not a 5 in a row that's, oh man, they're just falling by like 2 or 3 points a game. They're getting bombed every single game. Their offense is non-existent. What they had in the 5-game win streak had disappeared. This is the kind of game, though, and I see this so many times. I've just set you up. That the Carolina Panthers have come off this shootout with the New Orleans Saints. They're 12-0. They've already clinched the division. They're going for 16-0. They can sense a little bit of history. There's four games. They're four wins away from this mark. And the Atlanta Falcons, as messed up as they are, this has got upset written all over it. Absolutely. Why not in the National Football League? Atlanta gets its act together, finds a way to win. Don't know. Golden State Warriors are 23-0. They are in Boston tonight to take on the Celtics, or Friday night to take on the Celtics. So those are the three streaks that we're keeping alive throughout the weekend. God, I hope they continue. I hope they continue. Golden State especially. I now want them to go 82-0. Be completely exhausted when they get to the postseason. Get swept in the first round. Can you imagine that? If they go 73-9... but then lose in the first round of the playoffs because they're just beat, tired. Every game was an intense battle. And then they fall apart in the first round to some weak Phoenix Sun team or whatever. Very disappointed. The Heisman Trophy is also coming up on Saturday. Yesterday, Adam and I did our kind of breakdown as to who is going to win this thing, who should win this thing. Chris Houston is going to join us in the next hour. He's got the process all set. I don't know if you put a lot of stock into this kind of stuff, but tonight was the college football award ceremony. And these are where you get the Buckus Award and the Doak Walker Award and all of those kind of Davey O'Brien Award. And Derrick Henry of Alabama, who's one of the finalists, took home the Doak Walker Award for best running back and he took the Maxwell Award for best overall player. Now, I don't know how much stock you put in that. Sometimes you win those awards and you don't win the Heisman Trophy. The Heisman Trophy is kind of a different animal. It's voted on by a group of media members where some of the guys who still have a vote don't cover the sport as well. Some of the guys are really, really into it. So you're not getting a full range of dedicated people that are in line with covering this sport on a full-time basis. John Feinstein had a really good column today about this award. Talked about it in 1979. He had a Heisman vote, and he voted for Hugh Green out of Pittsburgh and said George Rogers won out of South Carolina. And he was very disappointed because he felt the wrong player had won. A year later, he gave up his vote. And he talked about how this award has now become an award that is given to offensive skill players. Charles Woodson is technically the last defensive player to win this thing, but he was a return man and played wide receiver too. While he was a corner, he really won it for his special teams work. We don't get defensive players that win this. Manti Te'o was up for it, and everyone thought he had a very, very good shot of winning it, but it ended up going to Johnny Manziel. Is this something that the Heisman Trophy needs to fix, or is this something that the Heisman Trophy has to fix? I don't know if it does, because the process for the Heisman Trophy is to give it to a player that you feel is the best college football player in the country. That doesn't mean you have to look at the college football athletes across the country with the sort of filter in your glasses that say, I only want to see defensive-oriented players. And Feinstein's other problem with the award is that it only goes to players in Power 5 conferences. Again, how does the Heisman Trophy prevent a voter from voting for one of the better offensive guys on a highly rated, highly exposed team? If I have a Heisman vote, I would absolutely peruse the statistics. I would peruse as many games as I could. I would be focusing in on who is really having the kind of year. But I would also be smart enough to measure that year against other people. If you are killing it for Florida Atlantic as a running back, if you want me to vote for you for the Heisman Trophy while you're running over everybody in your conference, I'm going to put your body of work against guys in the Pac-12 and the SEC and the Big 12. And I'm going to take into consideration level of competition, et cetera, et cetera. And look, I'm all for the little guy, too. I mean, a couple of years ago when I was in Colorado Springs, I covered the Air Force Falcons, and Chad Hall was a multidimensional athlete. I mean, really, really strong football player. And we did a bit on my show out in Colorado Springs, Hall for the Heisman. And it was mostly a goof, but you know, because we were having fun with it. We didn't think he'd actually get votes. We started noticing he was getting national attention. And we started noticing, hey, you know what? People are starting to notice Chad Hall at Air Force. He's not going to win the Heisman, but we would like to see him get the kind of recognition he deserves, not playing in the Big 12 or the Big 10 or the SEC or the ACC or the Pac-12. He was starting to get that. Keenan Reynolds of Navy is in the same sort of sphere. He had this phenomenal year at Navy. He was getting attention on an online poll. Somehow, some way, the online poll took his name off. That angered the people at Navy because this was a fan vote and this was going to be given one Heisman vote. And instead, it was dealt to experts. But if you're the Heisman Trophy, and I'm not talking about the media partners, the ESPN television, I'm not talking about the corporate sponsors that are a part of this. I'm not even talking about so much that the voters in and of themselves. If you're the Heisman Trust, how do you prevent this stuff? How do you help this stuff along? Let's say you're in the Heisman Trust and you say, "Gee, I really would like to open this up to more defensive players." How do you do that? How do you do that without compromising the process? How do you go to the nearly 1,000 voters, former players and media members, and how do you tell them to, hey, you know what, it would be nice if you lean defensive? Now, you're not supposed to tamper with their votes at all. How do you get a guy who doesn't play in a Power 5 conference? How do you get his name on ballots without, again, telling people how to vote? How do you do it? Because the moment you do that, you've tampered the entire process. You've ruined the entire process. If I have a Heisman vote and I'm getting emails from the Heisman committee telling me I really, really, really need to consider these players because A, they are defensive players and it's about time those defensive players won a Heisman, or B, the following players that don't play in Power 5 conferences, you are trying to influence my vote and you're not supposed to do that in an award that is based on the integrity of voting. People don't like the fact that voters aren't paying attention. Again, without doing an audit of all your voters as to how much football they're watching on a daily basis, how do you solve these problems? This sounds to me like complaining. They may be legitimate complaints, right? There may be legitimate complaints. Look, Derrick Henry, if he wins the Heisman Trophy, is going to cause a lot of people problems. There are going to be so many people angered at the process, thinking somehow it is rigged towards the SEC. Because that's what people want. That is what people are gravitating towards. My guy didn't win. It can't just be he lost. It has to be a massive, massive conspiracy. Even though Christian McCaffrey or Derrick Henry or Deshaun Watson, any one of them winning this award doesn't benefit or hurt the Heisman Trophy at all. All three of them are worthy. You're talking about the quarterback of a team that is undefeated and the number one seed in the playoff. A running back from a storied program like Alabama. And a guy that surpassed Barry Sanders in all-purpose yards. These are legitimate award winners. There is not one of those three guys that doesn't deserve this. And yet, because there'll be a belief that one guy just somehow benefited from the process, that all of it needs to be restructured. And nobody has come up with a way to restructure this so that a guy like Keenan Reynolds can win this award, or a guy or a defensive player could win this award. I don't know how you do it. I mean, if I'm voting, I'd like to think I would go, hey, a guy like Miles Jack or someone like that, or Manti Te'o a couple of years ago would be on my ballot, of course. A guy that has an incredible defensive presence? Of course. I would like to think that I would sit there and analyze all of this to a point where they would make an impact. I don't know. But I do know this. The moment somebody is leaning me towards those guys and towards that way of thinking, then the process is getting undermined. We'll talk USC and Sarkisian next.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again,
from the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to hook up with Chris Swanson from TrojanSports.com, part of the Rivals.com network. We are going to talk USC and Steve Sarkisian. Rather interesting developments there as Steve Sarkisian is suing USC. It's kind of sad, but at the same time, rather interesting. Chris Swanson joining us here on a Progressive Insurance Hotline. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. All right. At the crux of the lawsuit, the wrongful termination by Steve Sarkisian, what is his main argument?
That, you know, he's an alcoholic. USC knew. They didn't treat him right under federal and state law. It's legally a disability. And that, you know, the first sign, he's saying that the first or second sign that alcohol abuse was an issue, and he saw treatment for it, Pat Hayden kind of unjustly and out of the blue fired him. I think Steve Sarkisian actually has a good case if you read the lawsuit. Pat Hayden told him that he was on leave of absence, and he was in the process of going to deal with his alcohol issues when he was fired via email. So it is an interesting case. I think Steve Sarkisian has a good case, and I expect it to get settled outside of the courtroom.
I'm a little surprised by this in a way, because when I read this, I read it and it was pretty much, it seemed pretty basic. He was put on leave. Then while he was on leave, he was fired, and it seemed pretty cut and dry that he was fired for being an alcoholic, as you said. USC has teams of lawyers, I would assume, and that any decision to terminate an employee, I would think, would go through that process. Was there anybody that said, by the way, you've handled this completely wrong, Pat Hayden, and you cannot fire him?
I wonder. That's why I'm so careful to kind of make a judgment on this before it does go through the legal process. To me, it seems pretty obvious that Pat Hayden didn't approach this correctly and it was mishandled, and Steve Sarkisian is owed a great deal of money. I'm not a lawyer, though, and I assume, like you said, that USC would have, you know, plenty of lawyers at their disposal to look at this, and I would assume that, you know, before an employee is fired, that their legal team would feel confident that everything was handled correctly. So I'm not really sure how to comment on the case. To me, reading it, just as someone that hasn't been through, you know, law school or anything, I think it's kind of obvious, but I don't really know. It's not my field of expertise.
The night in August where he was intoxicated at the Salute to Troy event, was he close to being terminated at that moment? That was before the season. Was there any signs that Hayden had to think about whether or not he was retaining him?
I think he threatened his job. Steve Sarkisian said that in the lawsuit, that it was mentioned that he could be fired for that. And I think that it was made clear that he couldn't embarrass the university any further. And in Pat Hayden's mind, he did embarrass the university, and it was a conduct issue. But I'm not sure if legally it was a conduct issue. But I think that Steve Sarkisian, there probably was consideration about whether or not he was the right man for the job at that moment, when you're in such a high-profile place that wants to avoid embarrassment. And the first, you know, his first season, well, it was decent on the field, wasn't really up to USC expectations already. So I'm sure there were questions about whether or not to retain him at that point.
Can you take us back, Chris, for a little timeline here? Because he was put on leave, and at that moment, a lot of us in the media, and I know I commented on it, was my thoughts on Steve Sarkisian turned sympathetic. I wanted him to get better. I wanted him to go through the process of ridding himself of this disease, or at least trying to manage this disease in some way that we all kind of wish a fellow human being on. Then he was immediately fired. What was the time between the time that USC was reaching out with sort of a sympathetic push for him to get better to, we no longer want you as a football coach? What was going on in the middle there?
Well, I'm not sure there ever really was a sympathetic push from USC, because even right after the Salute to Troy incident, he was punished, which is, you know, he ran, I think, through some drills before practice to basically let the team know, oh, my fault. I you know, mishandled myself and caused an embarrassment for the university. And I think anybody that's educated on, you know, addiction issues know that it's not his fault. He shouldn't be punished for it. It's a serious, you know, disease that he should take care of, an issue. So I think USC just kind of mishandled it all the way. I don't really think that he ever got a chance to really deal with it. He was given a chance to see a counselor, but, you know, never really anything else to deal with an alcohol issue. But as for a timeline, Salute to Troy was right before the season, at the end of August. He was fired after a loss to Washington. So I believe at that point they were 4-2 with two losses in conference, losing record in conference play. So I think it did make it easier for USC to part ways with him, because he wasn't being successful on the field. I have a feeling that if Steve Sarkisian started the season 6-0, this might have been handled completely differently.
I read that in his contract, that if he was fired for a cause, that he would have a certain amount of time to fix the cause. Is this true?
I believe, from what I understand, when I read through the lawsuit, it was he had a certain amount of time where he had to be notified. He had to be notified of what the cause was, and then there had to be, I think it was an 8-day window before he got fired, probably to fix it. That's probably what it is. And that makes sense. I think that's common in contracts, especially that are so high in value where, you know, it's hard to just terminate things right away. So, yes, but that was my understanding from reading Steve Sarkisian's lawsuit against the school.
Chris Swanson joins us, Trojansports.com, on USC and the Steve Sarkisian lawsuit. Had USC not suspended him and simply said, we don't like the fact that we lost to Washington, would we have a situation here? Just a simple buyout goodbye?
Maybe. I think so. I think USC probably could have argued it that way, even though, you know, it does seem harsh to fire somebody, you know, just 2 years into their contract, not even 2 years, really. But, yeah, they probably could have handled it that way. The problem is that Pat Hayden and USC made it clear that it was about substance abuse issues, even though they tried not to say it. Pat Hayden told us when he announced Steve Sarkisian was on leave of absence, he said that it was clear to him that he was not healthy, which indicates that it's a health issue, which it is. And then when he fired him, he tried to make it about a conduct issue as well. He mentioned that in his speech. So it's true. I think that if USC maybe just handled it a little bit differently and, you know, offered to actually pay out his contract, which they tried to avoid when they fired him this way, probably wouldn't have come out. But it would have been hard to avoid it because the reason Steve Sarkisian was originally put on leave of absence was because he showed up to a team meeting and seemed intoxicated. So it's hard to say how it should have been handled. I think the school should have definitely done something differently, but I don't know if they could have avoided the substance abuse issue and it being out there publicly.
Clay Helton takes the interim tag off, and now he's the head coach at USC. In terms of that hire, is that going well with the people with the powers that be at USC, the alumni, the powerful alumni? He seems to be very, very popular with players, but on the same flip side, this is USC. You could get anybody that's available that you want. Is this going well? Is this initially going well?
Yeah, I think with the people that are really behind the hires, the people that, you know, with the big money, they approved it. You know, they're friendly with Clay Helton, probably thought he was a great guy that's been through a lot with the program, and they wanted to see him get his chance. It's a smaller group of people, you know, that's really kind of dictate the decisions that the program makes. But, you know, as for the general USC fan, I don't think there's a lot of excitement behind it. I think a lot of people expected USC to get a bigger name, and a big name, really, and there were plenty of them floating out there. As for the popularity with the players are always going to root for a coach that's on their staff, a guy that they know anyway, so that should be expected. They rooted for Ed Orgeron. They rooted for, you know, Steve Sarkisian and Lane Kiffin as well. They like those guys, and they want to see them be their head coach, so that shouldn't be a surprise or, you know, be a reason to hire a guy. I think that it's a case where Pat Hayden and a select few group of powerful boosters got together and decided they liked Clay Helm. They wanted to give him a chance. He doesn't have a big contract, so it's an easy buyout. It does have to happen, and they decided to roll the dice and say, why not? Let's give this guy a chance.
Is it likely, and I'm asking you to speculate here, is it likely that the situation with Sarkisian gets worked out and they don't go to court? Because I can only imagine the stories in court that are going to be brought up, and I'm sure both sides don't really want that. So is it more likely that this is going to get settled?
That would be my guess. I would be shocked to see something like this go to court because it does seem like, you know, if there's it's logical for Steve Sarkisian to win this case. It could very well happen. I don't want to put odds on it, but it seems like it's not a ridiculous court case. They probably expected to have to owe him some money anyway if they did fire him before they consider his alcohol issues and knew about them. You know, you expect that with the coach. So they probably won't be against, you know, just paying out his contract and making this thing go away and stop all these negative headlines surrounding the school. The team played in the Pac-12 championship game, and all anybody's talking about now is Steve Sarkisian suing them. So, you know, you want to get your name out of the headlines for those reasons as quickly as possible. I think USC is going to try to do that.
Chris Swanson again, Trojansports.com, part of the Rivals.com network. Really appreciate your insight on this. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Good stuff, Chris Swanson. And he's right. They played in the Pac-12 title game. Clay Helton got the job. Things are looking up at USC. And then this story comes around, and now you've got a university that fires a guy for being an alcoholic, handling it completely wrong. There are ways that they could have parted ways with Steve Sarkisian that would have been better than, hey, go get yourself some help. While I'm going to get some help, you're fired. And I'm really surprised, as I said in the early part of this interview, I am really shocked that USC, you would think, would be swimming with lawyers at their disposal. No one said, you know what? You really can't do this, Pat. Here's what's going to happen if you do this. This. And if he's smart and he gets his contract in front of a lawyer, they're going to tell him exactly what we just told you. This was a mess. It was absolutely a mess, completely mishandled. And now all of the good things that, like you said, all the good things that USC is kind of building and trying to strengthen and whatnot, all the work that Clay Helton did to sort of put that team back on track to get into a Pac-12 title game. And the Steve Sarkisian headline is dominating. And it's going to be bad for both of us, they settle this thing. All right, 800-777-2907. You want to get the conversation going. Coming up next, a lot of buzz today on the Cleveland Browns. I saw it at USA Today. I saw it at Deadspin. I think I saw it at Fox. I saw a whole bunch of buzz about the Cleveland Browns. Why? Because everyone's coming to the same idea. The Browns need an overhaul. The sorry state in Cleveland next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, so today seemed to have a common theme in a lot of people who are covering the league, and that is the Cleveland Browns are a disaster. They need a complete overhaul. They need new management. Drew McGarry at Deadspin suggested that the NFL step in and Colangelo this thing and bring in a guy that can help just bring the team back to some sort of semblance of good. Not even great, just good. So I went back and I said, all right, well, how bad have the Cleveland Browns been? So I looked up their history. Now, I want to make this clear. The NFL gave the Browns in 1999 all of the old history of the franchise, all the records and all of that stuff. They let Baltimore start fresh. You know, Cleveland moved to Baltimore. They let the Ravens be almost like a new team. But they weren't a new team. And while this is just bookkeeping, the reality is the Cleveland Browns in 1999 were an expansion team. I don't care that they had deep history. I don't care that they got to keep all of their records. They were an expansion. They were built from scratch. The organizational structure that used to be the Cleveland Browns with Art Modell, that went to Baltimore. So all of the years of experience and all of that stuff in that office went to Baltimore. That's why Baltimore was able to win a Super Bowl rather quickly. Cleveland was an expansion team. And since 1999, we know the quarterback jersey, that they've had 24 different starting quarterbacks since 1999. But as an expansion team, they have one playoff loss. One. They've had two winning seasons since 1999. Think about that for a second. Since 1999, they have had two winning seasons. Now, compare this to other expansion franchises that we've seen over the last few years. The Carolina Panthers, they were playing in the NFC Championship game in year two, and in a few years went to a Super Bowl. Played the New England Patriots. The Jacksonville Jaguars, also in their second year of existence, played in the AFC Championship game, losing to the New England Patriots. They also have a bevy of playoff appearances and wins. They may be bad now, but they weren't always bad. And the Houston Texans. The Texans, since arriving in the early parts of the 2000s, have had two playoff losses, two playoff wins, and four winning seasons since coming into the league. The Cleveland Browns, once again, since 1999, have had 24 different starting quarterbacks, one playoff appearance, and a loss with two winning seasons. This is a mess.
Who would you say is the best quarterback that they've had out of those
best 24? Quarterback they've ever had?
Yeah.
Well, let me. You know what? I'm going to look that up.
You want me to run through some names?
All right, hold on. I actually got this up because in my research, okay. I called it up.
How about Spurgeon Wynn?
Spurgeon Wynn, that was in 2000, started one game with the Doug Peterson, Tim Couch era. The best quarterback, I guess, would be Derek Anderson?
I was going to say Derek Anderson, Jeff Maybe? Garcia. I don't know how good he did there. Kelly, I just know he was good at some point.
How about Kelly Holcomb? Kelly Holcomb was the quarterback in that loss against the Steelers in 2002.
Can we put the McCown brothers together?
I think we can put the McCown brothers together. Colt McCoy?
Seneca Wallace.
I mean, I look through these names and I'm like, holy cow. Some of these guys, I go, wait a minute, really? This is an organization that drafted Brady Quinn and Johnny Manziel and couldn't figure out what to do with either one of those guys.
And then the one quarterback they did draft in the first round that they actually gave a shot to was Brandon Whedon. Awful.
Awful. Tim Couch was their starter on opening day in 1999, yep. The kid out of Kentucky. He gave way to Ty Detmer. Doug Peterson, Tim Couch, Spurgeon Wynn the next year. Couch again started all 16 games. Kelly Holcomb took over, led them to a playoff appearance where they lost to the Steelers. Jeff Garcia's on that list for 10. He might be the better accomplished quarterback along with Trent Dilfer. In terms of having something. Remember, yeah. Jeff Garcia was in the playoffs a lot, right?
Yeah, with the 49ers.
So, in terms of resume, would Jeff Garcia be the best quarterback the Browns have ever had in terms of...
Yeah.
Or Trent Dilfer with the Super Bowl?
I'd say Jeff Garcia in terms of just production.
Okay. Yeah, because Dilfer was a legitimate Tampa Bay starter in the years that Dungy turned that around. So, that was... He was constantly going to the playoffs before they finally gave way to Sean King. I think that's who he lost his job to.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Sean King. But Dilfer was, you know, and then he kind of gave way to Brad Johnson, and then Bucks ended up winning a Super Bowl. But Dilfer won a Super Bowl.
It's just like looking at this list, it's like, you know, Derek Anderson, Brady Quinn, Gradkowski, McCoy, Seneca Wallace. These are all just Jason Campbell. These are all just career backups.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the coaching staff, how many coaches have they gone through since 99? They can't find a coach. They can't find a general manager. The guys that they do have are like the bottom basement on the list. This is a job. Let me make this clear. A coach in the NFL is one of 32 jobs in the world. That's it. If you're an accountant for your company, there's thousands of accountants out there. There's thousands of radio hosts out there. You're an NFL football coach. There's only one of 32 positions you can have as a professional football coach in the NFL. And you can't find one guy that can do this really, really well?
To put the quarterbacks in perspective, you said the Browns have had 24 since 99. The Packers and Patriots have had 5 total.
Yes! I'm nuts.
Bledsoe, Brady, and Matt Castle for that year, and then obviously Favre and Rodgers.
I mean, this is inconceivable. When you think about it, look, I get it with injuries and whatnot, but looking at this list, this is a crappy, crappy list of guys who have started for this team. They haven't found one legitimate star amongst 24 people to play this position.
It makes me feel thankful for Jay Cutler as a Bears fan.
At least you have a guy that could... can win some games.
Yes.
I mean, if I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, how much money am I dumping into a team that doesn't know how to play this game? Not football on the field, football off the field. It's not that hard. Yahoo Sports Radio.